The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hello, and welcome to an extra special and delightfully spooky Halloween episode of All Crime No Cattle. I, of course, am your nefarious and nocturnal host, Detective Shea Butter.
And I am the skeleton woman, Aaron. You might be looking at the calendar right now and saying, "But Aaron, Halloween is come and gone." And so it has. But, gentle listeners, your hosts were desperately sick for the past several weeks, and our favorite holiday was thus poisoned. You see, even with several doctor's visits, and even with spending literally all of Halloween night at urgent care, and even with all the antibiotics in the world, we died.
This is quite true.
But, dear friends, we have returned!
With a vengeance for spook and Halloween.
For even death itself could not tear us away from providing you with these spooky tales from across Texas. So join the decrepit, resurrected bodies of your hosts as we sit around the campfire once more. Just don't get too close, for we may still be contagious. And first, let's travel to Witch Mountain. You're lost. Earlier this afternoon, you had driven up to Lester Lorch Nature Preserve in Cedar Hill, just south of Dallas, to take a hike. The preserve is over 86 acres, and you had heard it boasted some lovely trails that you were excited to explore. You hadn't really been paying attention to where you were going. After all, the park was small enough, and it would be easy to manage finding your way back to your car. The trees are just turning yellow and red, and the sky was perfectly blue. You'd been lulled by the sounds of the birds chirping and leaves crunching underfoot. You'd even spotted a few tiny wild rabbits and an old raccoon bustling about. Soothed by the visuals and sounds of nature, you had pressed on, allowing your feet to take you wherever they may. A chill, unusual for Texas even in the fall, had cut through the air so quickly that it had made you gasp and finally shook you from your stupor. You'd zipped up your light hoodie and blew hot breath into your hands as you looked around and slowly, slowly, a sense of dread began to wash over you. You are now deep in the woods, surrounded by trees, and every direction looks the same to you. The sun must have gone down, for the sky is streaked with amber and purple and darkening still. Everywhere was silence. The birds had stopped chirping, and there isn't a living creature to be seen. Even the trees themselves, once bright and inviting, stand menacingly, casting sharp, ever-lengthening shadows that remind you of knives. You look around wildly, trying to find something that would remind you of the way you had come, but nothing looks familiar. Your sense of panic increasing, you spin around and realize that you're on the base of a large hill. The hill doesn't seem familiar, but maybe if you climbed to the top, you'd be able to get a vantage point to see over the trees and get your bearings. Shoving your trembling hands in your pockets, you begin to trudge up the hill. The silence follows you. You can only hear the sound of the leaves disintegrating under your feet with each plodding step. As the sky goes black, you focus on the sound of your footsteps to keep the panic at bay. It's almost comforting, the steady rhythm of your footsteps, and you sing a little song to yourself to the cadence. You're almost at the top of the hill now and beginning to feel a little better, more in control. But what was that? A sound somewhere behind you had broken the steady beat of your footsteps. You pause, listening, but hear nothing. You continue, singing your little song to the steady crunch, crunch, crunch of your footsteps. Wait, that sound again, out of sync with the rhythm of your feet. It sounded just like your own footsteps as you crushed the dying leaves, but behind you. You whirl around once again, expecting to find nothing, but you spot a little girl. She's further down the path you were traveling and off to the side, standing slightly behind a tree. She's wearing a pink ruffled dress that is stained with something dark. She's staring at you. It's so dark out now that your eyes must be playing tricks on you, because it looks like her eyes are completely black. You involuntarily shiver with fear, then immediately feel embarrassed. It's just a little girl, and she's probably far more cold and afraid than you are. You call out to her, asking her where her parents are and if she's okay. She doesn't respond. She doesn't move. In fact, it looks like she's not even breathing. You take a few steps backward, overwhelmed with foreboding once again. You call out again to the little girl, trying to ignore your quivering voice, and tell her she needs to go home. You turn and continue up the hill. But the sound of footsteps follow you. You try to ignore it and begin walking even faster, hoping the creepy little girl will get bored and finally leave. But her footsteps continue, quicker now, matching your pace. No, faster than you now. You let out a curse and begin running up the hill. The sound of the little girl's feet quickened too, and now you can hear her tearing through the woods like an animal, trees breaking and limbs snapping. You're too afraid to look back. You're sprinting now, but the sound is almost upon you, and in only a matter of steps, the girl, the thing, will be upon you. Suddenly, you're out of the tree line, and you see a small, dilapidated cabin in front of you. You stop dead in your tracks. The cabin must be incredibly old. The wood is snarled and warped in some places, and the front porch has collapsed to one side. A lantern on the front step sends flickering light dancing out to you, little yellow hands reaching out to grab you. Something about this cabin strikes a horror in you far greater than your terror at the creature behind you in the woods. The cabin could provide shelter for you, a place to hide, a tiny voice in the back of your head urges you. But you can't bring yourself to approach. You turn, almost meekly now, to face the approaching sound that had bounded behind you. It's the little girl. She's standing only feet behind you. In the dim light of the lantern, you can see her dress is caked with dirt and blood. She stares at you with her black eyes and slowly steps forward towards you. You stand still, paralyzed with fear, but she brushes past you and walks up the stairs to the cabin. She spins, slowly, and her eyes bore through you once again. Then she turns and vanishes through the door of the cabin. Just like that. She hadn't opened the door, but merely walked through it like it didn't exist. And you're left standing there with only the sound of your ragged breathing. This is the story of Witch Mountain of Cedar Hill. And there are many stories like this from unsuspecting hikers. The cabin, it is said, is only seen at night and seems to move locations, as those who have visited the cabin once are rarely, if ever, able to find it again. Who lives in the cabin on Witch Mountain? No one really knows for sure, as there are no stories from anyone who entered the cabin and lived to tell the tale. Some believe that an ancient evil witch lives there and only allows the cabin to be seen by those whose lives she hopes to steal. And the little girl? Some say she is a lost soul who had been killed by the witch and who is forever doomed to help the witch beckon people to the secret cabin. Others believe the little girl is a glamour the witch puts upon herself so she can wander her mountain and lead her victims to their doom.
Well, listeners, are you enticed? Are you prepared to be further spooked, haunted, and terrified? Well, we are. And thank you, in the month of thanks, to you, Aaron, for bringing us that story.
You are welcome, dear Shay.
That's really an interesting story, though. I identify with it really well because once a year, every year on my birthday, we always go out to do a big disc golf day in the Cedar Hill Park, where there's these really amazing disc golf courses. It's in the same nature preserve.
Yeah, yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, and I can see the area you're talking about in my head because there's lots of hills, it's very wooded, it's thick, it's very scary. A lot of disc golfers call it Fangorn Forest because it's supposed to be, you know, the most scary disc golf course in the woods that you could play.
Oh.
Yeah, and that really parallels with your story. And you can definitely see it if you've been to that area.
Yeah. Well, you know what it reminds me of? I don't think it was the same location, but we were out playing disc golf somewhere. And so, well, you were playing disc golf. I, of course, wandered off into the woods to look for bones because that's what I do. And remember, there was that tree line with the fence where the house is beyond it. So, and then this tree line was right up against this fence on the edge of the park. So I was wandering through there and I found the creepiest place I've ever seen in my life. There was a wooden chair set up facing the park.
Mm-hmm.
There was a stand with an old doll on it.
Yeah.
And then there were like things hanging from the trees like you would see in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, I remember you calling for us and coming out of the woods and being like, you guys have to come see this. This is so creepy. And as we walked up, we were all terrified. We were like, this is a serial killer's place where he just watches people from the woods.
Yes, it was so freaking creepy. And I think I took a picture, but I was so creeped out that I got out of there as fast as I can. But if I have that picture, I'll post it for you guys because it's very unsettling. I have no idea what's going on there.
Hey, man, weird stuff happens in the woods.
Apparently in disc golf areas as well.
Well, that's really cool. So you have another story for us, I'm guessing. I'm going to slip back into my character now as we move on to this next spooky tale.
The town of Gonzales is located in south central Texas. Founded in 1835, Gonzales was one of the first Anglo-American settlements in Texas and was the location of the first battle of the Texas Revolution. You see, in 1831, the town's founder, Green DeWitt, had requested a cannon from the Mexican government to protect the town against attacks from Native Americans.
A few years later, fights between Mexicans and the Anglo settlers began breaking out across Texas, and the Mexican government decided to do a takesies-backsies on that cannon and sent soldiers to retrieve it. The people of Gonzales thought the cannon was theirs, fair and square, and refused to return it. Two Gonzales residents named Carolyn Zumwalt and Evelyn DeWitt took an old wedding dress and drew the now famous flag with a drawing of the Lone Star, a cannon, and the words, "Come and take it," scrawled across the bottom. The Mexican government then sent in 100 soldiers to seize the cannon, but were again rebuffed. Soon after, a man named James C. Neal shot the cannon at the Mexican soldiers, firing the first shot of the Texas Revolution. That same cannon would later be used during the siege of the Alamo.
Yeah, we learned a lot about this when we visited the Alamo on our San Antonio meetup that we did.
Yes, so there's a lot of interesting history when it comes to Gonzales. The town of Gonzales would later grow to become the county seat of Gonzales County. In 1896, the current Gonzales County Courthouse was finally constructed. The grand three-story red brick and white limestone structure was topped with a large tower. On each face of the tower hung a large white clock face. The clock tower was a dominant landmark in the town of Gonzales and worked perfectly until March 18, 1921. You see, the county courthouse had been erected next to the county jail, and in 1921, a man named Albert Howard was awaiting execution. Every day, Howard would peer out his jail cell window and see that clock ticking down the final moments of his life. And every day, his rage would build. He would rail and scream to everyone around that he was innocent of his charges as he paced his cell, pausing only to glare out the window at the courthouse clock tower before continuing his rampage. On the day of his execution, March 18th, 1921, Howard was led from his cell and up to the gallows outside the county jail in the shadow of the clock tower that had so offended him. In his last moments, he looked up at the clock, lifted his fists in rage, and screamed a curse at the tower, that this clock would never again toy with a prisoner by counting down to their execution date. Howard was then hanged by the neck until he was dead. Ever since Albert Howard's execution, the clock has never again operated correctly. None of the four faces of the clock have ever been in sync again. The clock tower has been struck by lightning several times over the years. In the 1990s, the clock was taken down to be cleaned and repaired, but according to rumors, even this did not fix the problem. We might not know if Albert Howard's curse on the Gonzales County Courthouse clock tower is real or ongoing, but we do know that the clock never did count down to another execution, as to this day, Albert Howard was indeed the last person to be executed in Gonzales County.
In the words of Iron Maiden, I'm sitting in my cold cell as the bells begin to chime.
What a good story.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. Apparently, this is a very popular kind of myth or legend in Gonzales.
It makes me wonder if there's like some critical flaw with the clock as to why it doesn't work anymore.
Maybe. I think in the 2000s, somewhere in the early 2000s, they actually took down the clock entirely and remodeled it and reinstalled it. So I think it's now different working parts and everything. I think there's still a rumor that the clock faces don't sync up correctly. So there's still that, you know, that legend still holds on to this day.
It's that one carrion call reaching out into the void to destroy these parts and instruments inside the clock.
Yeah.
For perpetuity.
But it is interesting that he was right. Whether or not he cursed that clock or not, maybe the curse was that Gonzales County would never ever execute another man.
Our next story revolves around the abductions of Clayton and Donna Lee. Clayton and Donna Lee of Houston, Texas, have been married for over 30 years. Like any long-term couple, the two have many interests that they share. But this couple has one unique commonality. They both have been abducted by aliens several times. Clayton's lifelong experiences with aliens first began when he was a child. He had been visiting a park in Houston when he was abducted. He believes that the aliens have kept track of him throughout his life, beginning from that first experience. Clayton even has a scar on his side that he believes occurred when the aliens took blood and tissue samples from him. About her own abductions, Donna stated, quote, "I remember just floating up higher, and all that was around were stars and blackness, and then I blacked out. When she awoke, she was in a cold metal room. The aliens entered. She remembers them as humanoid looking, tall and slender, with blonde hair." Like Clayton, Donna also claims that the aliens experimented on her and took something from her, although for Donna, the experience was much more distressing. Donna was 8 weeks pregnant when she was taken, and when she returned, she was no longer pregnant. Donna believes the aliens took her fetus. Altogether, the couple believes they have been contacted and abducted by aliens over 20 times. Donna has drawn pictures of the aliens, and both Donna and Clayton's accounts are eerily similar. They are always on guard, aware that it's just a matter of time before the aliens come back for them again.
How many of our listeners out there have their own experiences with the extraterrestrial and the extra horrifying?
You know what I love about this story, though, is that, oh, how eerily it is that their stories are so similar. Well, they live together. It'd be different if they were, like, separated by miles, yeah, or, you know.
Shay, we don't need logic in this episode today, okay?
It also reminds me of that Saturday Night Live skit where there's three people being interviewed about their alien experience, and two of them have, like, a not bad experience at all, and then one of them has the most horrible experience whatsoever. And I can't imagine if you thought you had been abducted by aliens and then all of a sudden you weren't pregnant with a baby. That would be terrible.
It would be terrible. Did it actually happen?
Yeah.
Who's to say?
But the whole time you were reading that, I was thinking of that character.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually perfect.
Our next story comes as a suggestion from Jessica from our Facebook group. James Britton Bailey, known as Brit, was a rough and tumble man even by colonial American standards. He was born in North Carolina in August of 1779. He married a woman named Edith, and together they had 6 children. The family moved to Kentucky, where Bailey became a member of the Kentucky legislature, until he was charged with forgery and fled the state, moving to Tennessee. Edith died in 1815, and Britt Bailey soon remarried her sister, Dorothy.
Oh, okay.
He and Dorothy had an additional 5 children. Bailey, Dorothy, and the children moved to Texas in 1818, and they settled near the banks of the Brazos River in what is now Brazoria County. And by settled, I don't mean that Bailey settled down. You see, old Britt Bailey liked drinking and hunting by day, and even more drinking and fighting at night. His idea of a good evening was a late night, a few glasses of whiskey, and if he was feeling extra frisky, a good bar fight would do the trick.
Well, this guy sounds like a classic brute.
Now, Britt Bailey claimed to have purchased the land he and his family settled on from the Spanish government. But later, when Mexico wrested control over Texas, the Mexican government refused to honor the arrangement. Britt Bailey was stubborn, though, and refused to move. Stephen F. Austin, who began establishing his colony of the old 300 in the area, thought that Bailey was proving to be a hindrance to his plans and demanded that Bailey leave. But if Bailey wasn't going to move on account of the Mexican government, he sure wasn't leaving on account of Stephen F. Austin. Austin didn't like Britt Bailey, and Britt Bailey didn't like him. But eventually, Austin decided to approve Bailey's claim to the land via squatter's rights and left Bailey well enough alone. Bailey was appointed as captain in the local militia and lived into old age doing what he loved, drinking whiskey, fighting, hunting, and a little bit more drinking for good measure. In December of 1832, old Britt Bailey died. We don't know exactly what he died of, but most historians think it was most likely cholera.
Oh, I was hoping for a fisticuffs fight. Just one last, you know.
Nope, he just got diarrhea real bad.
Oh.
His wife, Dorothy, set about handling his affairs, which included his bizarre and very specific demands regarding his burial. You see, Bailey had drawn up his will, explaining that he would need to be buried standing up, facing west, underneath an old pecan tree in the prairie next to their home. He requested that his rifle, his pistols, his hunting knife, and his lantern be buried with him. At his feet, he specified that he would like a jug full of his favorite drink. Whiskey, of course.
This is really elaborate, but I'm into it.
Dorothy fulfilled all of her late husband's final requests, save one. She refused to bury Bailey with his jug of whiskey, saying that the man had drank enough through his life. He certainly wouldn't need any more for the afterlife.
Oh, that's a burn right there.
Years passed, and Bailey's plot of land and the prairie he was buried on eventually became the town of Bailey's Prairie, which today is home to 727 residents. But perhaps 728, considering that Britt Bailey seems to have stuck around. At nighttime, the glow of Bailey's lantern can still be seen floating around his old prairie. The light skitters and twirls around the lonesome field, sometimes rising swiftly into the treetops. Tales tell of the light chasing people across the prairie and causing car accidents on the nearby highway. What is old Britt Bailey still doing here, you may ask?
Looking for whiskey. He needs his whiskey.
Well, you might be right. Most believe that he's wandering his land looking for one last glass of whiskey that was deprived of him in his final resting place.
I think his wife was right to not put that jug of whiskey down at his feet. Maybe he was a drunkard and a jerk.
Well, now he's a ghost that he's haunting people. Now,
yeah, that's what I'm
help
saying.
Anybody.
But now you end up with this situation where you have this ghost running around looking for whiskey and probably beating people up. You love to fight.
Now, although Bailey's light can be seen year-round, the sightings are more frequent every 7 years. Because the first recorded sighting of Bailey's light was in 1936, the next installment of that 7-year period will occur next year in 2020. So if you're around Bailey's Prairie next year, keep your eyes peeled for the ghost of Britt Bailey and keep a little whiskey on you, just in case.
Oh, I was about to say, make sure you have some whiskey with you. You know, for our Halloween costume, you had this amazing garter belt that had a little flask on it. Maybe that's something everybody could start carrying around in that neighborhood.
Just in case Britt Bailey comes a-looking?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Maybe he'll finally go the hell away.
Mm-hmm. Do we know where his grave is at all? Can we go and just place some jugs of whiskey there?
No, apparently exactly where he's buried has been lost to time. But I believe in 1970 or so, the Texas Historical Commission did put up a plaque with the story of Britt Bailey around the area that most people believe that he used to live or where he was buried. So Yeah.
Adding truth to fiction.
Exactly. Ooh. Spooky.
Spooky. God, we said that a lot on our Patreon episode that we did.
Well, it's time for our final story. The year was 1971, and 16-year-old Jacqueline was asleep in her bed. Her mother Louise and her father UD, known to friends as Dee, and her sisters slept peacefully too in the other rooms of their small house on South Jennings Street on the south side of Fort Worth, Texas. She heard a soft noise in her bedroom that jostled her momentarily from her dreams. Her father, a retired Air Force tech sergeant turned upholsterer, kept his work clothes in her closet and would often enter her room in the early morning hours to retrieve them. Thinking that the sound must be her father, she closed her eyes once again. But something felt wrong. Even with her eyes closed, it felt like someone was staring at her. She opened her eyes again to see a dark figure standing over her. He was bent over her bed, his head mere inches from her own, and in the dim ambient light coming from a streetlight outside, she saw a long hunting knife flashing in the figure's hand. Instantly, Jacqueline threw her blanket off her and leapt from the bed to stand only feet from the strange man. She screamed, "What the hell? What are you doing here?" The man paused for only a moment before fleeing the room and crashing through the front door of the house. Jacqueline rushed into her parents' room and woke them, breathlessly telling them about the man with a knife she had just encountered in her bedroom. Her father bounded out of bed and ran through the house looking for the man, but he was gone. The night had been cool, and her mother had left the front window cracked to let the cool night air in. That window had been opened fully, and the screen had been cut just wide enough for an arm to reach in and unlock the front door. It was clearly the way the intruder had accessed the home. They called the police. Soon, two Fort Worth police officers and a detective came to the house to take Jacqueline's story. As she recounted the frightening tale, the detective mused that her instantaneous reaction to jump from her bed and scream at the man might have been, quote, either really stupid or really smart. Her screaming at him ended up scaring him off. But, the detective told her, it was just as likely it could have surprised him into attacking and stabbing her. This was the 1970s, after all, and the way law enforcement spoke to victims left a little something to be desired. Jacqueline took the detectives outside and showed them that there were 4 to 5 vehicles in their driveway. She felt it was strange that someone might have tried to burgle her home when it was clear that so many people were there. And who would burgle a home filled with people in the middle of the night? Most burglaries occur during the day when homeowners are at work or school. The thought of what that man was doing in her home, in her bedroom, with a large hunting knife was terrifying. No knives were missing from the kitchen, so the man had brought it with him. It would have been useful to cut the window screen, sure, but a simple foldable pocket knife would have done the trick. She shivered as she thought of what she might have escaped. And I shiver at the thought, too. For if something had happened to Jacqueline that autumn night, this podcast wouldn't exist. I wouldn't exist. Because 14 years later, Jacqueline would give birth to your favorite ACNC host, the Bone Lady. Yes, that's right. This is a true story that happened to my mother when she was a teenager. She told me that weeks later, they received word that a young man had been arrested for burglarizing homes in the area, and they thought that he was probably the same man who had broken into hers. It's weird to me, though, because this guy was young, about 19 or so. He was bringing in a large, unwieldy weapon, a hunting knife to steal stuff. Why do you need that? That's bizarre. And he's breaking into homes at night, knowing people were there, and then standing over the bed of a 16-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Now, I know I'm a true crime buff, and so maybe my mind's going to darker places because of that. But that sounds like the making of a serial predator who was establishing a penchant for invading people's spaces and privacy, maybe willing or even hoping for some kind of confrontation or opportunity to hurt someone.
You know what it reminds me of is the Amarillo Bowie knife killer.
That's horrific. Wasn't that about the same time?
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, we're talking about 1970s where the serial killer was. That was like the decade of the serial killer.
It really was.
Yeah.
70s and 80s, man. That's not a time you want to go back to, especially in Texas. But yeah, it really reminds me of the Bowie knife killer because he had the same MO. He started as a burglar.
Mm-hmm. And he was very young. He was a teenager.
He was very young. And he also had a proclivity for knives.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. It creeps me the hell out. My mother did say that apparently the person that they ended up arresting, he had been targeting the homes of elderly people. So maybe that makes a little bit more sense as to why he was breaking in at night. He was thinking, well, they're not going to hear me and I can get in and out. But I don't know. That's incredibly frightening. Hopefully they caught him and he went away and never hurt anybody again.
Yeah.
But he probably got probation in the 70s and then just continued breaking into people's places.
Yeah, like Kenneth L. McDuff, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, well, he just broke into some homes. We can let him go.
No biggie. Well, for my mother's part, she said that it took years to recover from this event.
Oh, I imagine.
Yes. And I think you can see why. It's absolutely horrifying. It was years before she felt normal and safe again. She said that it was very difficult to sleep, especially when she was alone, especially in the dark. She would have nightmares. She had to sleep with a light on. She said that she also became much more aware of her surroundings. You know, she was 16 at the time. A lot of young women, especially back then, didn't think about those things. So she just became a lot more aware of who was around her and locking the door and, you know, all of those things that, you know, 16-year-olds shouldn't have to worry about, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure her anxiety went way up.
Oh, I'm sure. This is something that really affected her for a very long time.
Yeah.
So I'm glad she's okay, obviously, because without her, I wouldn't exist. And existing is basically all that I do.
Yeah, so I'm really thankful for that, too.
Yes, yeah. And big thanks to my lovely mother for recounting this very scary story for us.
Yeah, she's told this to us a couple of times. And
yeah.
And we've been talking about it, definitely doing it for the Halloween episode.
Yeah, it's probably the only 100% true story we've heard tonight. I'll point that out.
Yeah, maybe next year we can get her alien story.
I would love to. I would love to. But that actually happened in Alaska. Right. So,
well, we could still talk
about
it.
We could twist it around.
We'll finagle it.
So her father that I talked about in the story, that was my grandfather. I knew him as Papa. And her mother, Louise, from the story, is where I got my middle name. She died before I was born, and my mother named me after her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her nickname was Dump. Which is basically what everyone called her, according to my mother. Why? Well, that's what I asked. I was like, why the hell would you go by Dump? She said, and if you were wondering if I was truly Southern, this is my proof for you. She said that she got the nickname after the family's pet goat.
Wait, what? Your pet goat was named Dump?
And then they nicknamed their child after the pet goat. I also had a great-grandmother named Big Mama. And great aunts, Pig Eye, Chigger, and Bug.
Man.
So I'm as Texan as they get, baby.
Your family is something.
Dude, they are Southern. Southern. Love it.
Oh, man. What a good story. I'm so glad we got to cover that one. Yeah. Thank you so much to my mother-in-law, your mother, Jacqueline, for being a part of the show.
Yeah.
She's a big supporter. She's on our Facebook group, lurking around, throwing shade sometimes.
Yes, she does. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to take a little break. And then right after this, I'm going to go over our sources and we're going to do some of our Patreon shout outs. So come back.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Well, hello, AC&C Posse. I wanted to take a moment to talk to you guys about a little something that I've been doing on the side. You know, true crime is my passion, but even Aaron and I need an occasional break from looking up true crime cases. So when I feel like I need a little mental palate cleanser or I don't have that good news segment ready to go, I go to my favorite new game called Best Fiends. This is a puzzle-solving focused game called Best Fiends, and I really like it. It's got like fun little characters that evolve that are bugs, and they are fighting against these evil villain slugs that are trying to take over the world. And the thing I really like about it is you can evolve these bugs into different evolutions. They have their own little stories. And, you know, I have played the crap out of this game. This game is great. In fact, I'm already around level 200 or something, and I've played it quite a bit. Especially that since I've been sick and I couldn't podcast, I've been playing it on the couch while I need a little break from researching my next case. It's been a lot of fun. It's a mobile game, and it's not a game that you have to be an intense gamer to enjoy. Anybody can play it, and it's fun for everybody. It's challenging, but it also helps you along the way. And they have new monthly content that comes out off and on, and seasonally they do different things. Like right now they're doing a Halloween theme. Overall, it's just a really great time. So if you like to engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of new little characters that you can evolve and unlock their powers, I would highly recommend checking out Best Fiends on the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. That's Best Friends without the R, Best Fiends. Well, welcome back to the show. This is our after show. And big shout out to you, Aaron, for putting together an amazing post-Halloween, super spooky, haunty episode. We're not going to allow some viral throat infection to really stop us from celebrating the spookiness and the wonderful holiday that we love, which is Halloween. So thank you for that. That was really good.
You're very welcome.
Also, if you're interested in checking out some more Texas spooky stories that we've done, you can jump over to our patreon.com/allcrimenocattle page, and over there you can join for as low as $5 a month and get access to all of our Patreon-only episodes that come out once a month. And in October, we talked about the Haunted Baker Hotel in Mineral Wells, did a bunch of stories there in the hotel. It was super creepy and scary. And we had a lot of fun doing that. So if you're interested in those kind of things, go over there, check it out. Become a patron.
Yes. And you can find us on Twitter at ACNC Podcast and on Instagram at All Crime No Cattle and on our Facebook group page, which is ACNC Posse Discussion Group.
That's right.
Yay.
Follow us in all the places.
Or don't. You do what you want to do. But let's go ahead and quickly go over our sources for this episode. So for Witch Mountain, our first source was from a hitchhiker who claimed to have an experience similar to the one that I described, and that was on backpackerverse.com. There was also a blog article called Drinks with the Unknown from a post from May 1st, 2019, and another website called funandthetexassun.com in a post from September 17th, 2017. For the Cursed Clock, our two episodes were TexasEscapes.com in an article by Swoops and GhostStories.BrazoriaResearch.com in an article by Ronald Howard Livingston in April of 2010. For the abductions of Clayton and Donna Lee, it was first reported in Local 6 News in Orlando, Florida. And in the mid-2000s, Clayton and Donna Lee came out with their stories and they did a bunch of interviews with the media. So a lot of this information came from those interviews, especially from The O'Reilly Factor from January 2006 and CNN Saturday Morning News on June 10th, 2006. They were also featured in the book Abducted, how people come to believe they were kidnapped by aliens by skeptic psychologist Susan Clancy. So she did hypnosis therapy and all of these different things with them. And her whole thing was trying to describe and explain why people feel they have been victims of alien abductions. And one thing that I saw her quoted as saying, which is very interesting, she said, "So people have symptoms like psychological distress, anxiety, sexual problems, nightmares. And for better or for worse, today being abducted by aliens is a culturally available explanation for why you might have some of these symptoms." So that's a source that you can read and check out. I kind of want to.
Yeah, that is an interesting hypothesis.
Yeah. And then for Bailey's Light, we had the KHOU article by Kevin Reese from May 13th, 2016. DreadCentral.com and an article from John Condit from October of 2007. And the Texas State Historical Association website at tsha.org in an article by Merle Weir. And of course, our final story, Jacqueline's Intruder, was from my mother.
The horse's mouth.
Straight from the horse's mouth, baby.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, great job. You did so good.
Thank you. And I hope you guys enjoy this. Obviously, this is something very different, but it's our one chance every year to do something just a little silly and fun.
Yeah, and we love Halloween, so we had to do it.
Yes. And when I said that we were literally at urgent care all Halloween night, we were.
Yep.
We got home at like 11 o'clock that night, and well, it was awful.
I did think it was nice that urgent care offered us a little bit of Halloween candy while we were there.
Yes.
At urgent care. That was the little tiny bit of celebration we got to do for Halloween that night.
Yeah, they had like a little bucket of Halloween candy out, and I was like, joke's on them. I took a whole handful.
Well, let us not forget, we have to mention the producers of these episodes, which are our Texas Rangers. And those names of our wonderful Texas Rangers include Lisa Layton, our first, foremost, important Texas Ranger, been here since the beginning. She was sick as well for the last couple of weeks. She's been dealing with some similar illnesses that have been going on. So our hearts go out to Lisa. Mel Thomas, Andrew Margerison, Serial Killer Sweets, Kate Williams, Dom Maloney, Matthew McConnell, Steph White, Danny Jordan, Michelle Guess, Mickey N, Lisa Mann, who hosts the true crime show Tex Law. It's a show about Texas and Louisiana true crime. Hannah McInnes and Stacy Kyle Sisnitsky. I probably butchered that last one, but sorry, Stacy. I tried. Also, I want to throw this out there that next Thursday we will be putting out a new regular episode, and we will be focusing on the Rodney Reed case, which has been circulating all around the media the past couple of months. It's kind of culminating because Rodney Reed is set to have an execution date November 20th of this month, and we are going to try and do our best to get out there and cover the story so that everybody can kind of be informed and know what's going on with Rodney Reed's case.
Yeah, I'm very interested because I've had to avoid learning about the case because I knew that you were very focused on doing it. So I'm right. I'm very excited to really hash this out and get into the details about what is going on with his case.
It's an extremely complicated case. If you've listened to the Mystery in Pampa episode that we did on Hank Skinner's case, imagine that times three or four. It is very complicated. There's a lot of really interesting information that hopefully we can all cover in just one episode.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm very excited to hear all of it.
All right. Well, hang in there for that. We'll be back next week. And we love you guys. Thank you for your support. Always go out and rate and review the show. That helps us a ton. And until next week, always remember that stories are spookier in Texas. Adios.
Bye.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.